time for Culture Shocks with your host, Barry Lynn.
All right, and welcome to today's edition of Culture Shocks. This is Barry Lynn. Exciting news that we've been talking about too today. News that's not so hot, frankly, particularly for those of you listening out in the state of California. November the 4th, 2008, as you remember probably, was not just Election Day, the day of the election of Barack Obama as President of the United States, but also in California, the day that Proposition 8 passed by about a 52-48% margin. That decision overturned the decision of the California Supreme Court to recognize same-sex marriages in the state of California. And as I thought I understood that case, a majority of the court said, look, marriage is a fundamental right, and under the concept of equal protection of the law in California, we have to try to treat people equally when it comes to fundamental rights. Thus, same-sex, opposite-sex marriages, both would be recognized as a civil matter. Well, some people didn't like that decision. They put Proposition 8 on the ballot. Lawsuit, after it passed, was then filed. We've talked about it a number of times with a number of people involved in it, challenging the legitimacy of the way in which Proposition 8 was drafted and promoted. The argument was this was too grand a change, or in this case, too bad a change in the California Constitution to be one accomplished simply by a majority vote. Today, the Supreme Court of the state of California, with only one dissenting vote, said, nope, this is perfectly okay. It's what the people said. We're going to let it stand. Joining us again is the Reverend Susan Russell. She's associate pastor at the All Saints Episcopal Church out in Pasadena. Reverend Russell, nice to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pretty grim day out there, although I guess the one bright spot is that the 18,000 marriages of same-sex couples that occurred before Prop 8 are allowed to stand.
That is a bright spot, but I'm refusing to call it a silver lining.
No.
I think one of my colleagues, I just came from a press conference downtown, and one of my colleagues said, we now have first, second, and third class citizens in the state of California. And we are confident over the long haul it's not a decision that will stand, but it is a sad day. And we are gearing up to continue to do the work we need to do to overcome it.
Let's talk just a little about the decision. It's extremely long. It's about 120 pages, and there's a 40-page opinion by the dissenting justice. All the Republican-appointed justices voted to stick with Proposition 8. The one Democratic appointee, I think from ex-Governor Gray Davis, voted to overturn Proposition 8. But to what extent does politics play a role in these decisions? You do, after all, have recall possibilities for justices of the California Supreme Court.
We do. And, you know, to what degree politics plays a role in the debates and discussions between the justices, you know, we may never know. I think it's naive to think it doesn't play some role. I think it's sad. I think the justices had an opportunity to do something creative and courageous and take a step that would move us beyond the letter of the law and call us into the spirit of their role as part of the independent judiciary to protect those what they call suspect minorities from the will of the majority. They chose not to. I think that's a sad day for California, and it's a sad day for justice. But at the end of the day, again, I think Martin Luther King famously said the arc of history was long, but it bends towards justice. We took a step back today, but I think eventually we'll overcome. But it's a sad day, and it's one of my colleagues this morning just said, we were checking out on how we felt. She said, I'm just embarrassed to be from California.
Well, certainly in light of, shall we say, the tremendously positive activity that's been going on in places like Vermont and Maine and places where you even have governors shifting their positions and saying, you know, I used to be against same-sex marriage, as the governor of Maine did, but then citing both civil rights principles and religious freedom principles says, I'm going to sign it anyway because I think that's the right thing to do.
And I think that's exactly the sort of energy we're going to build on. I mean, the really sad thing that I hope your listeners will understand, regardless of what side of this issue you fall on around marriage equality, we're now going to gear up here in California, and there will be another campaign, and we will do our best to convince fair-minded Californians like those governors you cited that it is both a civil rights and a religious freedom issue, and I believe at the end of the day will prevail. And our energies are going to be going into that, along with our opponents, instead of fixing health care, dealing with the economy,
yep,
worrying about education, fixing the infrastructure, doing all the work that that we desperately need to do here. I think at the end of the day, the responsibility for this lies at the feet of those who are so determined to have their own theological opinion prevail that they've been willing to write discrimination into the Constitution.
I was pleasantly surprised by the tone and the strength of Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's statement. He said this is the law of the land because this is what the majority of the Supreme Court said, but he suggested that it would turn out to be on the wrong side of history.
Right.
Will that make a difference if he is this clear now about where he stands whenever you get this on the ballot again? Could it be on the ballot, by the way, in 2010?
It certainly could be. I mean, and that's the sort of, again, I'm the pastor in the table. I'm not the politician or the legal strategist. But
thank goodness.
We're certainly listening to allies that are saying we have to go for 2010. Others are saying, you know, 2012 gives us a longer time to build coalitions. There's sort of the balance argument between the need to do coalition building and the desire to seize the momentum on the marriage equality issue. I don't know where what we'll end up doing here in California, but I know that I and my congregation and our allies in California Faith for Equality will be supporting whatever move those smarter people than me decide to take.
Well, it's also, you know, there's a point at which, because you're selling yourself short on the smartness scale, but the point is, some things are just obvious. Some things are so clear that you would think you wouldn't need to launch multi-million-dollar campaigns. But unfortunately, that's what it's going to take, because whenever this is launched, 2010, 2012, you know that the other side is going to do the same disreputable
right
things that it did in 2008.
Exactly. And the hard work that's the encouraging piece, however, is the hard work that's going on right now is building coalitions across lines of ethnicity, of culture, of race, of gender, of religion. At our press conference, we had the Reverend Eric Lee, who's the head of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, as successor to Martin Luther King Jr., mm-hmm, saying today in the press conference in L.A., if Martin King were alive today, he'd be standing with us on this justice issue. We had a young Mormon filmmaker who is an active spokesperson for marriage, contrary to his faith, to his church. So,
right,
you know, we're making progress.
The one of the issues that the court talks about, and you just alluded to this, a suspect classification. They you know, the dissenting justice said, obviously, this is a suspect classification, and therefore we really have to be careful and make sure that we treat people with that classification equally with people who are, well, on the more up and up by classification purposes. And I've started to hear this argument here in Washington, D.C., from where this program emanates, as we debate at the city council level and perhaps eventually in Congress whether the District of Columbia can, A, recognize
right
marriages in other states, and, B, become another jurisdiction that affirmatively permits same-sex marriage. But people are starting to say, well, it's only the elitists, because those gay people, they, as sometimes referred to, they're wealthy enough, so there can't be a suspect class.
Well, I think that's not a good argument. I think it's certainly one. I can point you to any number of couples in my constituency who are, you know, far from affluent. But nevertheless, it's a red herring. I mean, that our constitutional rights are not only entitled to people of one class or another. I mean, if we're going to be, one of the things I said today, in addition to being a priest and pastor and, I guess, an activist,
yep,
I'm also a mother, and I have a son who's on active duty in the U.S. Army. He swore to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Including the enemy of prejudice. We're going to get right back to that. The Reverend Susan Russell continues with us from All Saints Church out in Pasadena, California. When we come back, we're going to talk a little about a woman named Mildred Loving and what she would have said about today's decision. We'll be back on Culture Shock. Okay, We are back right here on Culture Shocks. I'm Barry Lynn, and my guest is the Reverend Susan Russell, Senior Associate for Parish Life at the All Saints Church in Pasadena, California. One of the people who fought against Proposition 8 said this violated fundamental civil rights principles, fundamental religious freedom principles. Proposition 8 passed on Election Day last November. Today it was sadly upheld by the California Supreme Court with only one dissenter. Reverend Russell, one of the things that's happening in the East Coast, as more and more states in New England decide to embrace the idea of same-sex recognition for civil marriage, that's all we're talking about, not forcing any church to marry anybody they don't want to, people in Washington, D.C., this has become a bit of a polarized issue on the basis of race, or at least that's the way some people are posing it. The former mayor of Washington, D.C., a man with his own, checkered past, Marion Barry, cast the lone voice here in the D.C. City Council against recognizing same-sex marriages in other states and said that to do so would be the beginning of a civil war, the bloodiest war, of course, in American history. Another gentleman we had on the show, Bishop Harry Jackson, who people see on television a lot, said that this would, here in Washington, would be the Armageddon of the marriage battle, another very bloody reference to literally the end of human history. What did you find within the African-American community in California prior to and following the vote on Proposition 8?
Well, one of the things we found with as we've examined poll numbers and the postmortem is the initial numbers that indicated that there was a huge disconnect between the African American voters and the and other more liberal other Obama voters, for example, those numbers were completely skewed at the beginning.
Really?
By bad poll numbers and bad analysis. And although we still have a lot of work to do in the African American community around issues of marriage equality, it is very clear that the picture is not as grim as has been painted, and there are any number of strong justice voices within the African American community who not only can but have been speaking up. What the LGBT community, the gay and lesbian movement, has to face is that we have not done a good job of coalition building in our history, and we're seeing that change. So out of the silver lining out of all of this may well be that we are now doing the work that should have been happening in terms of building alliances with other justice communities around issues of the economy, on poverty, on health care, on prisons, on immigration, and building the kind of coalition where we find connecting things around the issues that oppress everyone. And at the end of the day, I think we're going to be stronger because of it, but it's been a hard-learned lesson.
Yeah, it is, and of course it takes up a lot of time and energy and resources and all of that, as you had indicated earlier. This is clearly, in my view, the civil rights struggle of the 21st century. I have no
Thank
doubt
you.
That your speaker who spoke at your press conference you just mentioned, Eric Lee, is right. If Dr. King were alive today, there's no question in my mind. I was only had the opportunity to march with him once, but that he whose side he'd be marching on today. And Mildred Loving, who was the African-American woman of the couple, the Loving couple, that brought a lawsuit. She was an African-American woman in the District of Columbia. She and her husband moved to Virginia, and they were promptly arrested because it was a crime in the 1950s and early 60s to have an interracial marriage in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Right.
So she took the case to the United States Supreme Court. She died just a year ago this month, actually. But before she died, she wrote a very eloquent statement talking about what Loving, her name, really meant. It was about love, and she called on people to recognize same-sex marriages. That still doesn't convince some of the major, I have to say, I mean, we can look at the statistics, but people like the Reverend Floyd Flake up in New York, prominent African-American minister, big supporter of the Hillary Clinton campaign, they're very down on this issue. Now, the argument, of course, the problem is if one focuses only on minority communities and their apparent, maybe more than real, apparent opposition to marriage, we forget that there are a whole lot of right-wing white people who are really driving this, and it's their dollars that are funding this hostility.
That's exactly right. And I think what at the end of the day, what we're working towards are building coalitions with allies on a cross spectrum of issues, where at the end of the day, we may still disagree about what we're going to do in our houses of worship, about whether or not we bless unions. You know, we're working with partners right now who won't do interfaith marriages. Mm-hmm. But what they understand is there's a big difference between protecting freedom of religion within our own sanctuaries, our own synagogues, our own mosques, and allowing anyone to write their theology into our Constitution. What I hope will happen with some of the big African-American churches, it will be able to sit down across the table and be able to unite on these fundamental values of protecting our constitutional protections for all people. If what happened today in California, I don't think it's too strong a statement to say we have seen what could possibly be the end of constitutional democracy in California and a return to something more like mob rule, where a bare majority of a population can take rights away from a suspect minority. If that can happen to us, it can happen to anybody. And that's the issue that should be in front of the American people right now.
Yeah, it should be. And it's interesting that I have not heard anyone suggest that this ruling of the California Supreme Court raises any federal issues that could take this up to the United States Supreme Court. I can't really think of any. But there certainly are going to be issues that come before the court. Judge Sonia Sotomayor, who was nominated today, a few hours ago, by the president to serve in replacing David Souter on the United States Supreme Court. It is justices like this that are going to have to, and I assume she will, of course, get this job. There'll be mumblings and rankling and annoying TV commercials, but she's almost certain to get this job, but she's going to have to rule on these issues. And she and many other people that President Obama considered for this post don't have very strong records, not on reproductive choice or on religious freedom or on GLBT rights. And I think some of the groups here in Washington who have been following this are really looking to get some answers from not only Judge Sotomayor, but also anybody else that gets picked to be on the Supreme Court.
And those are exactly the kind of questions we should be asking. I think today's decision in California just points out how critically important it is that we pay attention to what's happening with judicial appointments. I made the point this morning, I applaud the selection of a candidate for the Supreme Court who's going to bring in diversity both in ethnicity and gender. But does anyone actually think that this amazing woman would even be an attorney, much less a candidate for Supreme Court justice, if earlier courts had not paved the way by striking down laws that create discrimination against all kinds of minorities? The California Supreme Court today failed to live up to that standard of prophetic justice, and it's a disappointing day, but again, I think it's just a step backward on the long journey forward.
Now, I take it that the process, though, of failing, since you can recall justices, but I mean the people who are disturbed about the decision today are not talking about having some kind of recall campaign against the people who voted for Proposition 8 today.
If they are, they're not people I'm listening to.
No.
Because frankly, those are the kind of tactics that we expect from our not-so-loyal opposition. I think the work we have in front of us right now is to do the hard work of building coalitions, changing hearts and minds of fair-minded Californians. The most important work we have in front of us, frankly, is framing the debate ourselves and making sure that when we go back at it next time, it's about equality, it's about justice, it's about making sure that liberty and justice for all means all, and that we don't allow the other side to steer the debate around education of our children or religious freedom or any of those red herrings. We need to be strong. We need to be proactive. We need to be organized. And we're going to need a little luck. And we need to eat our Wheaties because we've got a lot of work ahead of us.
No, absolutely. But and you're right. So many of these are red herrings. And in fact, they're worse than red herrings. They're red herrings that have been left unrefrigerated and unpackaged for so long that they are rotting the debate. They really are taking the heart out of what ought to be a civil rights struggle and sent into all these multitude of other directions where the stream is stagnant.
That's exactly
enough
right.
Streams. Listen, I want to thank you, Reverend Susan Russell. You're a terrific guest. I always appreciate talking to you from the ground there about what is going on in regard to this matter.
Thanks.
And, you know, You cited Martin Luther King, and he and others have said it. You know, there's a point at which you just can't stop history. You can't stop the right thing from prevailing, and that this day will be seen, I think, as a blip on the radar on the way to a better country for all of us.
Thank you,
Reverend Russell. Okie doke. That does it for today's edition of Culture Shocks. I'm Barry Lynn, and we'll talk again.
This edition of Culture Shocks has been produced by Diane Robinson, engineered by Dwayne Davis, and the Genesis Communication Network technical staff. Visit us online at cultureshocks.com.